said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear. Me, my co-host, Brian, and we got a great guest, Anthony. How are you, Anthony?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you doing?
Good, good. We're good. How you been? Tell us a little about yourself, and we'll get started on this today. We're talking Barbarian, but as everyone knows, we'll take a bit to get before we get that.
Sure. Hi. I am TJ's hetero life mate that he may have talked about. Good friends with TJ, grew up in New Jersey, moved out to LA, working in like media, film industry and stuff like that. And then just recently moved up here in Seattle with my partner. So
awesome.
Yeah, big fan of movies. They have run my life. That I'd like to say television for the most part. It was the Simpsons job, yeah, movies have been a big driving force for me, and love talking about them, love discussion about anything film related. So I'm excited to this is my like first official podcast.
Cool. All right, well,
discussion, so I'm ready to get going.
Welcome aboard there.
Joe, do you remember the first time you did a podcast?
Oh my God, I never want to listen. Like the first year.
Oh man, I'm thinking like 2015. A really nice, like Swedish guy asked me to do a podcast with him. It's not great. I had so many failed startups.
First time,
For every podcast I've actually done, there's like three that failed.
Yeah, first time.
But
I
look,
did first time I did a pod. It was right after me and Brian and linking up with a few different people, but it wasn't with Brian. It was with this different adjacent person, and I went on as a full-blown guest. And I didn't know how to be a guest, and I went on for topics I had no business talking about. Rough stuff.
Like,
and then, I would say about a lot of other times until then. So, yeah, you're in good company. We got
right.
You.
We've all been there.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big Flyover fan. Love Flyover. So, yeah.
I mean, truly, yeah. You know, we're about to, unfortunately, be once again flooded with celebrities in the podcast market, and little pods like ours are going to get shoved down again because ain't nobody going to be working for a while, and they can't. They're desperate for attention. So, you know, the little guys, but we're out here, we're putting out that quality content. We do it for the love of the game.
And every
quality
celebrity is going to go, oh, might as well give this one a try. Oh, this little thing. Oh, something's so bad.
It's
so
just a throwaway for them. They're like,
so
you
the
gotta,
weather
you
in
have
California.
A spin-off. It's amazing.
Bad.
Like not many spin off something that like they complete, like let alone just, so yeah, it's, I've been a big fan of Flyover. I'm sad to see it end, but it's awesome to see you guys spin something off where you're still together, see the chemistry flow, and talking about horror. Horror is
Fear's the child. Fear's my baby.
It's
and Brian's
dream child, if you will.
Brian's adoptive second child. But
if I had been a cooler 12-year-old, I could have been your dad.
Yeah, in the spirit of a first episode, and of that, what we like to ask here: what is your horror origin story? And you know what? It doesn't have to be. You really answered how you want. I mean, even if you aren't into horror, which
you know, Flyover. So treat the question like Joe would. Do whatever the hell you want with it.
Yeah.
Like if
do what,
think,
do what you want.
Whatever you want to interpret the question as, that's what it is.
Yes, Brian, that is exactly how it's written. What is your origin story of horror?
I'm eager to answer. Sorry. Like that's like such a great question because that's for me, I would say it's like a two-parter. It all probably circumvented around when I was like five. It had to be at least before I was six. I was living in Philly, and that's before I moved to New Jersey. And I remember when I saw It, the TV's It, saw that, scared the shit out of me. And yeah, it did its job. But what really sold it for me, what really pushed me, like, I guess, in the sense of like being my own like adventurous person, diving deep into all this, I had a horror, like I had a nightmare about it that night. And it was terrifying. I was like, not to get into too much of a detail, but I was basically like, you know, think of like in a dream, like your room and like a wall, and it's like an endless wall. And I'm scaling my wall with members of the Lost Boys from Hook. And
okay.
Yeah, and it's a fun little adventure.
My language here.
Yeah, and all. But then all of a sudden, what's his name? I forget his name. The one who Peter gives the sword to at the end.
Oh yeah, Thud.
Thud. Thank you. He turns to my doorway, which magically becomes adjacent to where we're climbing, and he just screams, "It's him!" And I look over, and it's like silhouette in my doorway, and I scream myself awake. But the thing is, when you're a kid and you're like in that like mental daze of like reality and just coming out of it, mind you, again, I'm younger. I have to be no older than 5. I look over and I still see the silhouette. And
sure.
It
was probably like your dad coming to check on you or something.
Well, here's what happened.
Because you just woke up screaming, so an adult in the vicinity was probably standing there like, what the fuck's wrong?
I screamed for my mom, and I screamed for my mom very loud. But the problem was, at the same time, my mom, who had watched the movie with me, was also having a nightmare where she was being chased by a clown through a circus. So when I woke up and I saw its silhouette still in my peripheral and all, I screamed, "Mom, help! Come here!" And then she woke up at the same time and screamed, "No, you come here!"
Oh,
and
wow, that'll do it.
Yeah, that left me in a predicament. So I had to just be brave for the sake of my own 5-year-old, like, you know, life. And I ran through the silhouette, because it was still there, into my parents' room. And once I recovered and I realized, I'm like, wow, a movie could affect me like that. Like, that changed me forever, because like, I liked being afraid. Like, once I calmed down and I let it settle, like, yeah, being afraid and getting over it too. Like, when you're afraid of something and then like, you're able to like move past it and then appreciate it is amazing.
There's a thing, especially with, I mean, that's such a vivid story of like 5-year-old, like being 5 years old and doing that.
You can tell it's like burned into your memory. I mean, things that happen to you at that age are part of the core of your being.
Yeah, and it is so, I feel like, fundamental to people of a certain age too, where like a lot of like, it's very like, that's the one that did it, and then I spawned to this and this. And that's what you said is like not common, but common enough in like stereotyping, like, young boys or like young children, really, there's an attraction to fear. So when they find out that they like being scared, they just want to keep getting more of it.
Dangerous. It's dangerous.
That's why roller coasters exist.
Yeah.
That's why.
Funny you say, like, running through that silhouette and then being like, oh, I kind of liked it, which it was like, you know, that's not common to be like, well, the nightmare scared me, so I'm back into it. Have you watched the documentary about the making of their miniseries, It? There's a really sprawling...
No,
it's on Shudder, I think, isn't it? Or
it's Squawk or Shudder.
Shudder's the spot. Like,
it might even be one of the others too.
But you should check that out.
I was thinking too, from your story, how fun.
I would love to. I didn't even know that there was one. I would happily like to check that out. It's one of those, it's one of those films, like, it caught you by surprise because it was on TV, and, you know, like, with your parents. It's like, it's on TV.
TV feels
like,
safe. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's free roam. It was free. Yeah, that was free roam as we got back then.
I'm a little bit younger, so when I first saw that It miniseries, I remember, like, the imagery growing up. Mm-hmm. First time I ever watched it was too old. Like, I was, like... 13.
Yeah.
I think it was like, no, it was like 12 or 13. And the payoff of it was so, it was a sci-fi channel marathon of the Shining miniseries. and It.
I love the Shining miniseries. My friend
I'm both. More of a Stand miniseries guy.
We did myself. We did both in one. The one day, I just remember equally, we were like, that's what happens?
Yeah, for both. Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're dealing with a clown and just, like, its representation and all. When you were my age and seeing something like that, it was game over. Yeah.
And I had the same thing, like, people who know that, you know, obviously we're a big Child's Play guys, and that's part of my horror origin.
Oh, I was going to say Child's Play!
And I had the same thing with, like terrifying nightmares, like about Chucky, like solidify. It's like it was scary, and it made me scared of Chucky, but it also made me like obsessed with Chucky in a way.
I saw the which Chucky was it? Where during the like opening credits, it's like showing his creation. Two. It was like two. I watched two when I was
like 91, I think.
Unfortunately, 91. Stumbled into a lot of horror, and two was burned in my brain because it was a doll coming to life, and I never saw one.
It's like made to scare.
I swear, growing up, the Child's Play two, Child's Play would play so frequently on like the WB or like UPN Sunday movies,
They tried to like make it homely by editing it. Like, don't fool with the Chuck, and you're just like, like you're not doing it the way you think. Yeah, but funny here, if I can, just funny. Speaking of just like when I was a kid, funny little story. Another introduction, a main introduction, because I'm not sure which came first, it or this, but it was my first true introduction to gore when I was a kid. I was watching a movie with my dad, and up until a couple of years ago, I didn't know what the movie was, but I found out.
Oh, I love when that happens.
That's a funny joke. And after that. So I'm watching this movie with my dad, and all of a sudden this scene happens where all these people in this room start like massacring and each other. Like at one point, like some guy's like playing with his guts. Another guy is, there's like a hand that pulls like a tongue out of a mouth. And like all of this insanity is happening. Yeah. And I'm like, I remember like thinking like, oh my God. I'm younger than five. Sorry if I'm yelling. I'm younger than five. Okay. And I'm like, oh my God. And in that exact moment where like the scene's about to wrap up, my mom calls me into the dining room for lunch. And after seeing all of this, coincidentally, the thing she puts in front of me is a bowl of beefaroni Chef Boyardee. And it totally just the last thing. Yeah. And so like that movie put me in a tailspin. But I never like as a kid like checked what like remembered what it was. So, but it affected me forever. It was like, what was that movie? Like it haunted my dream sometimes. So like when I was like I was 25, I was like Googling I was describing the scene, and I was coming up with nothing. And I was like, I this can't be the end of my search. So coincidentally, like I want to say like maybe a month or so later, I was on, I want to say Reddit, and somebody was on randomly, because I was subscribed to like horror, like specifically horror movies, specific subreddits. And somebody asked a question about like this specific scene. And I remember reading the title. I was like, that's it. But this person didn't know that the movie was either. I almost like, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry when I found out that it was a scene from the movie Summer School.
I know the name. I know the
it's like a horror art
comedy. Face from NCIS
Brian knows who, like, you're in good company. This has happened to me like twice on this show, this discovery of childhood like movies too.
Oh yeah.
I almost lost it.
And coming just, from odd spots. Like my one is so similar to yours. Is my brother rented a movie when I was a kid, and him and his friend was like, get out of here, you know, you can't watch it, it's too scary. It's probably about that 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And I remember there was like green shit, you know, and I don't really remember anything. Years on years later, it was Troll 2.
Yo, whoa. Troll 2 freaked me out as a kid.
Not being able to pinpoint the burned memory, to
you can see the scene in your mind, but you have no other frame of reference.
I was always able to see the green.
Yeah.
Green on the food, and then like there's black and white photos in the kids' room of like troll stuff, like in the beginning.
Goblin
stuff, really. Anyway, so that's just like the summer school thing. Like, I get it. Like, because one time Brian and I were talking, we talked about that. We did the Omen trilogy before Brian was a co-host. It was just me and him. And there's a scene where he's holding like a glass of wine and talking. And that, I was like, holy fuck, I've been searching for this shot for years. I thought this was like a Bloody Mary movie that I remember. So I get it. And it's like really interesting of your like linear path to getting to horror and everything like that. So today we are talking about Barbarian. Why, before I read the wiki and all of that, why did you pick Barbarian?
Because it did its job. I mean, It was it was a tight film. I just rewatched it and I was reminded, like, cause like I love seeing a movie for the first time is like one of the greatest thrills a person can have, especially when like it nails it. And yeah, this movie really did. And I've been hankering to see it again, and seeing it again, I realized I'm like, wow, this movie doesn't really spares few moments to like keep you reeled in. And the marketing for it was like incredible, in that if there was extra marketing beyond its first trailer, because that first trailer really did it.
So
it worked like a teaser, and yeah,
it's funny you mention that. I was just told, you know, some people saw it, it was great, you know, like, it was great, watch it, don't watch anything. So I never saw a trailer, and then I went in blind, and same thing.
Right?
Before we recorded, actually, when you were coming on, I viewed the trailer, because I'm just thinking, how was this marketed?
The extra noise.
So it's very just marketed as this, you know, traditional horror movie of, it was actually marketed as, like, the fake out, like, it's going to be a romantic comedy, and then it goes to a horror, like, car movie. But, okay, that's a, you know, great reason to revisit something. So, well, just real
also,
quick.
Like, I think just, it's nice to, you know, shout out new horror, the one that's good. There's a lot of shit gets thrown up against the wall, like, the new Insidious movie came out and made money, but from all intents, it was nothing special. When something comes out that's got a little bit of spice to it, and they got the, you know, I love a movie that knows how to love a classic part of horror is a good marketing campaign. You know what I mean? Blair Witch, you know, Night of the Living Dead, sometimes word of mouth and like a little bit of underground love. And I think Barbarian definitely with its like, don't go into this knowing as little as possible kind of vibe.
Went in blind. Real quick, it's Wikipedia'd, or not Wikipedia, Googled description. Let's see if it is accurate. A young woman discovered...
How much do you think Google is going to spoil in the description?
That's what I... A young woman discovers the rental home she booked is already occupied by a stranger. Against her better judgment, she decides to spend the night, but soon discovers there's a lot more to fear than just an unexpected house guest.
Too much.
Think it's a little too much, especially just with the...
I think it's honestly pretty restrained.
It's honest.
It is restrained. I mean, yeah, it's as restrained as it can be while also being just like, take out that last part. Just be like, oh.
I agree the part.
Yeah.
Because with the movie, directed by Zach Krieger, the guy from What Is Kids You Know, which is a really cool tidbit.
He's the guy that Justin Long's talking to in the bar.
Yeah.
And he basically admits to the rape.
Yeah. But what's cool about it is the movie does set it up that way. It uses our expectations as audience members to be like, Bill Skarsgård, you know, was it Bill? Yeah. My Skarsgård. Bill Skarsgård, we've seen him be creepy before, so I don't trust him. You know, everything's played at an arm's length.
It was perfect. That was perfect casting. Like
it's doing everything. So really, not knowing.
Honestly, it's the same reason that he was so good that you can cast him in John Wick and just like put him in a funny looking suit and be like, that's all you need to do.
Oh yeah.
Just Bill Skarsgård's face and a weird suit, and just let him kind of do his Bill Skarsgård thing. And like he works the same way here. Where
I didn't realize he was a producer on it either.
he's unnerving.
It's nice. I loved the subversion of like an actor. Like you rarely see it done in a way that doesn't like it, like it's perfect. Like he's just coming hot off of it. Like you have an actor who's just completely just has you like. Even like you saw the trailer, even at the very end of the first trailer, there's like a glimpse of the mother, if that's what she's called. And but even then you're like something's up with this guy, and they nail it. And just he does he gives away Zach Krieger. I love now that like we can all be like, I love that Wikipedia is like the official place to go to for like information and stuff like that, because it's just flooded with just great stuff. Like I saw Zach Krieger, he wrote the story after he wrote this book. Oh, not after you read.
He read a book, The Gift of Fear.
Yeah. Oh my God. I discovered it. Like this is me discovering it and just like looking at like all that. Like he, like after reading like you know some background. I don't have like access to the book at the moment, but. But just it shows talks about like just trusting your gut basically more in situations where it could precede violence.
Yeah,
if you watch Bill Skarsgård, he's giving off so many red flags. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It has to be this guy.
Bill Skarsgård in that sings, you know, the book's about this woman who just use your gut and don't trust the men around you because of that. The way Bill Skarsgård in every interaction does the thing, I think, like, I know, like, unintentionally I do it. It's like, oh, I'm going to undercut this with a joke to make myself seem less threatening, but it probably seems threatening to some, you know, in a situation where it's like...
It makes it worse.
It makes it worse instead of just doing that. And
the big thing he's doing, which I think is the most, is like, he's doing the... Like I'm listening, I'm understanding, but he doesn't actually like he does all the like he gives all the cues like he's being a sensitive person, but he's not actually listening to what she's saying. Like every time she turns down the drink, he still insists on getting her the drink, and it's like he's doing it in a way that he seems like he's being nice, but when you break it down, he's just not listening to her at all. You know,
I'm guessing like you know about the book. Like all of these are like are things called pins.
Like, oh, okay, yeah. I just have the one kind of bullet point. Oh, yeah. So, book, so, so like, anything you want to share about
so
it?
So he read the book and he saw that in the book, like there are these things that were he was introduced to called pins. It's an acronym for pre-incident indicators. Basically, it's like events and behaviors that often precede violence. And like, yeah, just I'm just having read like it focuses on like a bunch of them. And what you're talking about, both of you just like the examples are pinpoint like things from the book, and that he definitely like grabs from and was influenced from. Just from like the thing you're talking about over like offering the drink and like being insistent, like oh have this. That's called like loan sharking, I believe. That's like a thing where like you're like giving unnecessary help. And like that can come off as like eventually like trying to twist it in like oh like you owe me or whatever and stuff.
He based the scene on manipulation tactics, but the character is using them genuinely, but they still give you that off.
Like I said, I understand energy. As being a goon. Yeah. I understand the Bill Skarsgård character where you truly are just, you mean nothing by it. You're just being yourself probably and being like, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to sleep on the couch. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
I watched this with my partner when the mother bashed his head against the wall and he was dead. And she screams and it cuts to black right before it cuts to Justin Long. My partner turns to me and goes, Bill Skarsgård was just some weirdo, and all, I'm like, I guess so. He's not even really a weirdo.
He's just like a kind of normie guy.
Like he looked like Bill Skarsgård. Just unfortunately, looks like he looks weird and sexy at the same time.
Well, it's just like the situation. It's like all right, like, what's built like for him, you know.
So yeah, it's just like that was a great twist because they did him like they did fucking Sam Jackson in Deep Blue Sea, like he's dead already. Like
About like I was trying to time check while we were watching it this time. It happens a good like 25-30 minutes into the movie. we spent a lot of time and the making of this movie is pretty or like how it got developed. Because we already met Zach Krieger. Like took 2 years to write it. No one wanted it, and especially the one note was. Well, it was based off of that book, and also he was VRBOB or whatever Airbnb host. He was like Verbo.
Like even the word barbarian, I think intentionally has barbarian. Airbnb in it. It's got that.
The
Barbary, the road the house is on, so they're barbarians.
So
he's ambiguous in interviews about where barbarian title came from. First he said like, oh, well, you know, he just used it as a placeholder, but then eventually in interviews he was like, oh, but in when he wrote the original story, which was like 30 pages, it had Barbary Street in it. Like he identified it as that. And he basically admits while also being like, you know, aloof and coy that like, that's basically like he rolled with, he's like, all right, maybe barbarian as like a title. And then the story kind of wrapped itself, his words around the title, and it got more gruesome from there. So, yeah.
I mean, the one thing that's, yeah, that makes sense.
I think the title works too. It's like on a lot of that's why it's good. You can just baseline it
one word
like that.
One
barbarian
word
barbarian could be referring doesn't to the mother. Barbarian could be referring to the father. You know,
The ambiguousness of like the title is like incredible.
It's a smart title for sure.
It makes you think. But like, wow, there has never been. I mean, I'm sure there was to a degree, but like, there's never been a mainstream title movie named Barbarian before. Like, wow,
that was surprising.
Nobody plucked this because
it does seem like a thing that you would already have.
I placed this in like the same bracket as like
just
Misery.
The Barbarian
it's
Brothers.
Like, what
you know
title?
What I'm talking about?
The
Barbarian Brothers. You know, we'll just get them on there. They'll be in the sequel. They're probably dead of heart attack.
Two brothers, barbarians.
Mark Wahlberg.
I did want to say real quick before we get Joe, I know we're talking a lot. I did want to say this was my okay. third watch. Saw this in the theater. I really liked it a lot. Saw it again on Max. I really liked it. And then I hadn't watched it in a while. In the third watching, I do think that the gimmick of the movie is the hard cuts and the switches.
So
like there could be a little bit more in that first scene, in that first opening act, to hint at something. Once you know that it's never going to progress to anything until he gets
Brian just nailed it for me.
Like once you like, and I'm saying the second time it was fine because I liked watching it the second time and knowing what was going to happen and kind of watching it with that. But the third time it didn't hold that grab again.
So
it,
Brian, like, you it, just took the words out of my mouth because this is the second time I'm watching it since
and all the acting and stuff and the performances are good and like the energy's all still there, but knowing that it's not going to lead to anything.
I found myself the second time, and I mean this very respectfully to the movie, just not giving a shit about any of it.
In the first act.
In the first act especially. Yeah. Except for generally, honestly, Tess. This is the only she's the driving force.
I still liked all the stuff we talked about with Bill Skarsgård and that energy and that back and forth between him and Tess. All still plays in the first act. It's all still good, but like I just didn't. I just didn't feel as like drawn into it I did before.
You know, it's forced. It's like because what's forced tension? Tension for the sake of the movie to happen.
So this movie,
and
I don't know if you guys remember when this movie hit HBO Max 2. And I mean, this movie suffers from a flaw of audience members, not of the movie. Of, I'm sure 80% of the people that recommended this are friends. Like, well, you got to wait for the twist and watch the twist. And I don't remember when it hit Max. There was a flood of people going, I didn't get it. It wasn't that great. I think the movie is really good. And I think that's because when you tell someone, well, the twist is so good, and this.
Oh, yeah. Telling somebody the twist, period,
don't
is
even
a
say this,
killer.
Don't even say there's a twist.
That.
So, this movie got
the bomb. Go
this movie
it.
Got, I think, indirectly suffered from that.
Sure. Any movie that gets a lot of hype is also going to get an equal backlash. You know,
but Brian,
that.
You nailed it, though, with the, my rewatch stuff. Was very not as, I think the movie's tight, but it felt like there was a little more meat on it than needed to be too on my second watch.
Well, like I said, I don't necessarily think the first act is bad or anything. There could have been something peppered into it, though, that just kind of ties into the rest of the movie more.
You know what it
you know
feels
what I mean?
Like?
You know what I really felt the time jumping and like the skipping felt a little more gimmicky this time when I was watching it. I was like, you really could just take these scenes and reorder them anyway. If you did Justin Long first and then hard cut to Tess showing up in the rain, it would still work the same way, basically.
The movie,
you know?
Feels really like when you watch a TV
this is all
show.
The same. These are criticisms based
This is like a four out of five movie.
The movie is structured.
Except Twister.
The movie structured like a TV show that, or like a mini series or whatever.
Yeah.
That gets like 8 episodes, and you could tell in like the 6th episode they were like, we did a flashback episode just because like. We were given an 8 episode order. That's what kind
we
of
only
some
had
of
six
them.
Episodes, and we were given an 8.
Yeah, you know,
episode.
Like it has
I like
that little off.
The flashback does it for me, simply because of just the reasons why you said it's very it trims a lot of the fat, probably fat that could have stayed. I'm a big fan of lore, lore in film. Like it gets me, and if anything, that flashback. Like hooked me even deeper. It's definitely like Oops. Just cheap candy to like yeah. like it doesn't
well,
have
I think
to it didn't have to be in the movie. But I loved how it was like I love how it was framed. I love how it was focused on the captor Frank. That was his character.
Yeah, maybe. No, he's super creepy.
I think both of the hard cuts work really well.
Yeah,
but it definitely when I was watching it this time because they're both it's the same. It felt gimmicky because it's really the same beat twice. It's like big scare and then hard cut, bright lights, shiny,
Joe Chill from
sunny,
Batman.
Everything's clean, you know what I mean? So it's not a bad beat, but it did feel more like you know what I mean? And again, these are multi.
Well, these hard cuts are like big beats, and like that thing, it's like.
Well, yeah, it's the style of the movie.
But it's not a gimmick. But I totally understand how it can like knock somebody kind of off, like their their own beat. They're like, oh yeah, I'm vibing with this, and then before like you see the like a hard smash cut. Or like a head being smashed, hard cut to Justin Long. Even though that whole scene like builds up to who the character is, you're still like and like the cut. And
it works as a comedy beat too, but then when they redo it and it doesn't have that comedy element when it because it's more it's a more uncomfortable vibe and that you know in the second second go round. No, I think it's really good and like I said, I don't think it is gimmicky. I just think because it felt that way to me because I was like sitting down with like a critical mind and being
it's
like,
different.
Oh no,
there's this thing with the podcast
know, with
where
the
it's
bloom
different.
Off of it. I've watched it a couple times. We're a couple months removed. Like, is there anything about this that I think, you know, is imperfect? Because I definitely was very hot on this movie when it came out.
Like,
because I do think it's very good.
It's very
after the
good.
First viewing, I was one of the first things I said after the first viewing was like, yo, love the movie, this and that. The fuck was up with that homeless guy? Like, why was he like homeless Superman? And just like his whole approach was terrible. Like remember when he ran the other time? He's like, little girl, I'm gonna get you. And
he chases her back into the house.
Andy Muschietti's It coming out.
Yeah, like what the hell? Like
Chases her the first time before we even see the mother or anything into the
house. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I appreciated the flashback because he became an exposition machine, and then just like since there's not a big huge cast, like we got to kill somebody.
So I like
but he informed us more about what was going on with like I'm not saying like, oh yeah, show me more.
Well, that's another thing.
Killing these women, but I would love to have like learned more about like, you know, like was there more like. If you're, if you're making kids upon kids, where are the other kids? Like,
I would say that's a criticism I had this watch was like, I feel like that's like a little hand-holdy for like dumb viewers. Like, I feel like everything that the homeless guy tells us has been laid out pretty clearly by that point.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, now for all the dumb-dums, here's exactly like what was going on.
Yeah, that could have been
I got my arm ripped off and I got beat to death.
That very much feels like a studio murder. Like, you get it. I feel like.
Yeah. I do I do appreciate this movie's restraint in not showing us any rapes.
I feel like
we're finally getting past that in horror movies now.
Oh, absolutely. The cut to Justin Long watching like the last 2 seconds of that video and cutting stop. That's all I thought. Can I give credit to the sound in this movie was amazing.
Really good sound design.
That scene, that cut was enough because like you heard something like disgusting happening on, but it was just 2 seconds of enough for him to hit it off, and you're just like, oh,
yeah,
and just you're right there standing next to Justin
and
Long.
And we already know that Justin Long is like a huge piece of shit, and if this made him react that way, he's a guy who's already a bad.
Watching Phil build it up, be disgusted is it works. Woo!
I'm bad, but I'm not this guy kind of vibe.
I know. But that's the thing that's the beauty of this. That's where like the parts that really work is like you're in a room with two horrible people, and it's in a situation where like this old guy did it to countless women, but they're both horrible people. But the movie tricks you because it's just like you see him being all upset. You're like, I'm going to call the fucking cops and blah, blah, blah. And like he's trying to escape and all. And for a brief moment, you're like, wait, are they giving this rapist guy redemption? And you're kind of almost getting disgusted with the movie. You're like, what are you doing, movie? But then like eventually it's like, oh, okay, movie.
Yeah, not to overpraise the actor Justin Long, but this writing around the character of that character really
sick. Oh, yeah.
As far as, like, way he reacts to his own, and, like, the way he, like, talks around it and talks himself into things and, like the mental gymnastics element of what he does and how he convinces himself is all very well done and well written and well acted by Justin Long.
Yeah, no, he's really good in it. It's just the little character things too. Even the way he sees the basement that's decrepit with the fucking weird bed.
That's a classic. Thing. Like I think that would go down as like a classic just scene because that was funny. Great. The juxtapose from when she was like Tess was like horrified by it. Oh, that's like
the hard cut to him just measuring is really like I said. This you can tell this movie was written by a guy with a mind for comedy because of the way he uses those hard cuts.
He said he was inspired by Get Out and stuff like that. So like the comedy to horror pipeline is like strong. Like I feel like you can't do like Barry. Barry's another like not to just randomly name a show and stuff like that, but like. Comedians know horror because, like, I've always said, I feel like, and it's been said before, like, it seems like comedians have an easier time doing drama than vice versa. And yeah, like, and it goes hand in hand. These are things that are meant to like surprise you. Like, your heart races when you're laughing or when you're horrified. And like, yeah, like for a comedian, especially like, I love the Weiss kids, you know, but from something like that. To go to this, like you first, you're surprised, but then it makes sense. Like, remember the like just the tone of Whitest Kids, you know, just like like the scene where he's like walking through the park with a gallon of PCP and stuff like that. Like they just
kind of like shocking absurdity, which is like can definitely vibe with horror, you know.
And they've done right, like again, like you said, like I don't need to see this, like the physical, like we're past like the Saw and Hostel days and all, like. But yeah, just the shots of like the human sized cages and all, you're like that was enough to make
the
me
gross
cool, like,
stained bed
in
the
yeah
bed.
No I
human
just
want to
rein this
cages.
In
it's like
we're,
you don't
we're,
need
we're burning through a lot of plot points.
Oh, that's true. We're not really talking about the plot,
talking about it.
Yeah, You're right. Let's let Joe walk us through a bit of the plot first.
Yeah. I just, No, so there is that, you know, everything you just said, which was a lot. So they do, we do meet the two, Skarsgård and Tess. And then there is that thing, we already went through that, and he gets his head smashed in, and we see this monster. And that's when it does hard cut to Justin Long, and it is a jarring juxtaposition.
And I feel like that's what people were calling a twist. That doesn't really feel like much of a twist.
It's a storytelling twist, I think.
Yeah.
It's
like a tonal shift.
Or like a whiplash, if anything. Yeah.
Typically that shot with, you know, cut, and then she's in the cage, right? Or whatever it be. We go to this guy, and like Beach Boys type music's playing on the coast of California.
Donovan, shout out to Donovan.
And, you know, and his agent basically calls him, or someone is like, your show's canceled, you have allegations. And he's immediately, like you said, smarmy as shit, of just like, what do you mean? Like, I'll talk to her. It's fine. And they're like,
yeah, all he cares about is the show. He just asks about the show. He doesn't care
also,
about anything else.
So, it also, his whole scene, though, highlights another really, his whole intro scene highlights really another good thing, too. It shows us that, like, a lot of these actors and how they don't have any actual friends. Their friends, who they think they're friends, are just people they hire.
Yeah.
Who work for them. So, like, because he goes to the financial guy of, like, can you help me out? And the guy's like, yeah, you're a client.
The guy just gives him his numbers and he's like, okay, and also I'm done. I'm cutting ties.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
Everybody, he gets immediately abandoned out there. But also, like, they do a lot. There's a lot of character building done. Like I said, the writing's very tight as far as, like, they tell you about what he is supposed to have done, but also all in what the way he responds to it, you're learning a ton about his character and the kind of entitlement and the kind of like Hollywood phony. Yeah, it's just a very like tightly written scene where you get a ton of information.
Not
about
taking
the guy.
It seriously in the sense of on his way to the, you know, in the airport or in Michigan when he's landed. You shouldn't be leaving the state. What are you doing?
Same, or when he was talking to the financial guy, it's like the guy tells him, like, you could get rid of your house in L.A. and you'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's like,
sell these properties and you'll survive for a couple months, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's he, like, all, only cares about is, like, his Hollywood phony life. He's like, gotta keep his house in L.A. He's gotta, you know.
Those are things, like, I picked up on the second watch of it. It was just, like, the subtlety of difference of, like, yeah, we know exactly who this guy is. Mm-hmm. And home.
We talked a little bit about they do a good job of taking you through his
Brian, you froze. You guys,
himself froze and stuff.
Yeah. My one question, and correct me if there was a line in it, is who manages his rental properties?
I get the impression that it's a it's like a service. It's like a company who, like, he owns the building.
Yeah.
And then a company basically, like, stages it. So they put all the furniture in.
Gotcha.
They put all
and
then they handle it. And he just gets, like, a check from
them. That's
probably
what I imagined.
Me was that he was on the phone with them, and when he was on that, had that conversation, and they told him, like, oh, yeah, we didn't rent it out to anybody. Like, but, like, Tess and Keith, Bill Skarsgård's character, they both, like, showed that they rented from two separate rental apps.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that there was, like, gonna be some weird twist with the management company or something like that, but nothing came of it. But that was just, like, a blatant thing where it was just like, well,
yeah,
either they're lying, either they're lying to Justin Long.
That's exactly what you said.
I was waiting for a reveal of sorry, Joe, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm saying that's what he said from his own experience. He said, I had my stuff on two different apps.
My whole thing was I kept waiting for a reveal that, especially once I realized that the dad was going to be down in the basement, that, like, he was, like, posting it on multiple sites to, like, trap people.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really seem to be what they... It doesn't seem like
he's on his deathbed.
To, like, keep people there or trap new people. He mostly just wanted to stay hidden down in his basement.
The last phone
And it looked
that
like
man,
it was just the mother who or the mother the, who wanted to get out. And
the last
was, like,
phone
yeah,
curious,
he's
you know.
Not working Airbnb, so...
Yeah, the last piece of technology that man had was, like, a Nokia like brick from like 98.
I think, yeah.
But, you know, that whole setup, though, with the Justin Long is important because we then do get back there. And I think it's been about, I think it's like a 3 or 4 day jump. It's not long, but it's not short.
Yeah, they don't specify, but it's just like she's, you would just assume he left L.A. immediately for Detroit. Mm-hmm. And a few beats have passed.
Yeah, we get Tess, who has just been in survival mode. Basically of like, okay, we see this mother creature, I'm in a cage, she wants me to be her baby. That is the thing. And Anthony, you already kind of did mention, you know, with the Justin Long stuff, before we do get back to Tess, it is pretty comedic, his measuring the room, everything going, and not registering that anything's off of this property. He just sees it as, well, more square footage, I could probably get a little bit more money out of it.
Yeah, it's all it all also services the shittiness of his character. Like, all those little beats are funny for the movie, but also, again, building more on, like, our dislike of Justin Long, you know?
If you remember when Tess finally, like, warmed up to Keith, and they were drinking wine on the couch and having conversations about, she was, like, talking about, like, an ex or whatever who was bothering her and this and that. She talks about how men and women have to navigate through life differently. And women have to be more cautious about entering situations where men stumble through them, because we're men and we have less to fear on a regular basis. And that's literally what Justin Long is doing here. He's ignoring all of the danger signs completely. Mm. Like, every time he discovers something that should be shocking, like, he's just happier about more space.
Yep.
And that's the part that made me laugh so much, was his obliviousness to it. But like, that played so well into his character. Yeah.
How different would that role be? I mean, originally he wanted to be casted as Zac Efron.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Zac Efron's great, and I feel like he's an underrated actor.
I think that becomes a different movie, though. I think it then just starts getting billed as the Efron horror movie.
Yeah, he would take too much from it, and he would definitely... I feel like he would have had to have been, like, some type of culprit or whatever, and...
It's a different movie.
I think it works better because, at the time when Zach was looking at someone else besides Zac Efron, Justin Long came to his mind because at the time, Justin Long was kind of looked at as like a lovable persona and person in general.
He's a doof.
It's just like, it's one of those things where, like, even in his film career, he never really made anything like that just put him
No one says the words, "I'm going to see that Justin Long movie."
Yeah.
I was thinking that either he knows that he has this kind of like, I don't know. He always plays a character that's like bordering on unlikable. And, like, he's either smart enough to know that and he just plays to his strength that he has that energy in him, or, like, that's just the way most people
The most likable he's ever been is in Dodgeball.
He's like an everyman, but he's always just on the edge.
Love you, Steve the Pirate. The thing is, like, have you either of you seen Promising Young Woman?
Yes.
Okay, so the director of that movie specifically hired comedians to be like the shitty guys.
Oh, yeah, like Bo Burnham.
Yeah, Bo Burnham and what's Sam Richardson and
shit,
all that.
You're right, yeah.
Yeah, and she purposely did that as a point to make about, like, you know, like, even the cliche, you know, aggressor in films and TV and stuff like that isn't your typical one in reality. They look like Bo Burnham. They look like Justin Long. And you know, if like that's and that's the
Jonah
point.
Hill, apparently.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's
so,
it,
yeah.
And,
so,
and
it,
right
exactly.
Now on the news, both of them
and,
are.
It's one of the and it worked perfectly. If anything, it just like I believed it. If anything, like during this movie, seeing you know, the character of AJ being on screen and seeing all of his shitty moments, like you see it, and that's the thing. It's like this movie uses it's like timing, and just we don't get too much of like AJ on screen to really like know his past. We just know about this one thing he did, and then we're given brief moments, like when he's talking to his mom. Like, if you remember, he is, like, acting like a total asshole to his mom on the phone.
Oh,
he hangs
God.
Up on her when she's saying, I love you. And then when his friend's on the phone, what does he say? A homophobic slur.
Yeah, drop that F slur in there.
Yeah, what's up? And then it cuts to him at the bar.
You know what's also funny, not funny, about that is, last time he talked to that guy was in, like, 2007, and The Hangover just came out. And, like, that's the acceptable,
yeah.
like...
Yeah, greeting. Like it's, but some people didn't get the message. Like, hey, whoa, we shouldn't have talked like that then, but we don't talk like that anymore.
We're definitely not talking
about
that.
That's a great point. Yeah, just the back working is very
well. Disarmed us. They disarmed us with Justin Long because, like, the trailers. That was another thing with the trailer. Like, they gave you a brief. They show Bill Skarsgård in the trailer more. They showed like 30% of his scenes in the trailer,
yeah.
and okay. they only show like a brief Justin Long, and like, oh my god! And immediately you're like, oh my god, I feel bad for Justin Long, and then the movie's like,
I have an answer.
You sure about that?
I have an answer. By the way, it's 2 weeks later. Justin Long shows up.
Okay. Oh shit!
So she's been down there. Ooh, Tess has been living in the basement 2 weeks.
Yeah,
Ooh, she was sucking on that hairy baby bottle for 2 weeks. Oof. That was the grossest thing in the entire movie.
So yeah,
that
while that Justin
that baby you know, bottle where is and I couldn't I thought it was her hair hanging down and also touching the bottle.
That's what I thought it was too.
Yeah, like it's like her hair. I don't think the hair's on the bottle, but either way, very gross.
So we see the mother character a little more, and it's all like, you know, it's the old decrepit horror. It's I think there's actually a man, like a stunt actor, or a man, like
definitely a tall dude
to
in
get
a
that build.
Woo.
And it's just
a
creature. A
lot of
born
anybody remember the X-Files episodes Home?
Oh, it's Home. It's
yeah.
like
it's
Home.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
yeah.
it's years and years of inbreeding
Perfect.
Supposed to be. And we get that, and then captures when Justin Long gets captured, then we cut to the flashback. And we kind of already mentioned that, right? Of this older man who's going into I think fix air conditioners who and just abducting one, setting things up to abduct
an actor
woman.
Who exclusively plays gross creeps.
Yes.
Oh my
Joe
god!
Chill from
like,
Batman
I like,
Begins.
Like, yeah. If I think Batman Begins, but immediately if you've seen Doom, he's like the scumbag in Doom.
He's in the Rob Zombie movies. He's a gross scumbag.
Did find very nice from reading about my you know the making of all this movie. The director was asked repeated, well, you want to do like a prequel that's so set up, but like you were saying, the lore. And he goes, I have no interest of following this man around and the abduction of women and all this stuff.
Yeah, they already
for
tried to make
the
don't
set up
guy
the
an anti-hero.
They
like,
showed,
that's what reminds Brian. That's what the basement of all this reminds me of is the Don't Breathe shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what
the baby bottle is the grossest thing I've seen since the turkey baster.
So that's what this guy's doing, right? Is he's just doing this, breeding or like whatever, and birth a child after years and years of incest. We have to imagine
never
seen the light
he's
of day.
Probably kidnapping multiple women, right? Impregnating them, and then
all the VHS tapes.
The children,
I think.
He's like inbreeding him with his own children, and just. Couple generations
can I just,
at least. Gross.
Well, can I just make a note on the VHS tapes? Just real. It's a continuing. I didn't even know that I love this trope in horror movies, but I love video cassettes, like collections of them in horror movies with like disgusting labels. Like
where the labels
is,
are all grimy. Like.
No, it's a nice. Nice touch.
Woof, like it feels like that's enough.
Yeah.
Like use your imagination or don't.
Yeah.
Trust me, don't.
What was on your hands when you touched those, my man?
Like, yeah, Jesus.
And he's just like, decrepit and the Do you think those tapes probably are filled with mold also in that basement? Like, they don't...
Oh, yeah, he's breathing in some black mold for sure. I'll tell you one of the scariest moments, like a legitimately frightening moment in this movie that is unexpected, is when he gets to that door and you can see her at the end of the hall, mm-hmm. and she backs away. She won't come down the hall. She doesn't come near that room. She doesn't want anything to do with that room. And she's been this terrifying monster the whole time, and now she's afraid. And
that's her like,
what's like, behind yeah. this door that she's afraid of? That's such a scary moment. The way it's shot, the way she kind of slinks back into the darkness is so good.
Krieger really does an interesting thing where, you know, he makes her Frankenstein's monster, basically. And there's like a little bit of a sympathy you feel, especially
she's
in those final...
She's a victim. She's a victim.
Absolutely.
She's a victim. And like many victims, they turn into abusers as well, you know?
Yep.
You know.
Not all of them get to become 7 feet tall, though. So that's... No. Wow. Yeah.
And, but having gone through this and all, you know, seeing all of this... back, and this is the, you know, with the, you said the baby bottle, the breastfeeding, but they distract her and the two of them get away, and like Tess has no fucking idea who he is. Actually, Tess does get away, talks to the cops, I forgot to mention, and the cops, and I know there is some commentary of like using Detroit as this, like the city, you know, being the victim of like systematic abuse and all of that. Sure.
Yeah,
and that's partially of the, you know, the mother and then being trapped, and there's like a lot of metaphor there. But you know, Tess talks to these cops, and the cops are just like, she looks... I'm saying this the nicest way possible. The way she's been abused and everything looks like she's just one of these alcoholics or drug addicts that probably yell at those cops every day to help. Which is sad.
What's the giveaway? What's the giveaway though? Is the teeth? She had great teeth.
She's got Hollywood teeth.
She had Hollywood teeth. If somebody ran up to me, you got to look at the teeth and be like, "Okay, gotcha. Let's do
this." You have money. I can tell.
Yeah,
I have one, and like we know she's a good person because they're like, "All right, fine, we'll arrest you," and then she's like, "No, there's a guy in there." Instead of being like, great, just take me away. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
instead of just being like, save me, she tries to get them to help him.
Yeah.
That movie, like, that, again, another credit to that movie, the way it's able to just randomly, first, for a brief second, make you forget that there is a horrifying monster in a basement, and it directs all of your attention to hating these cops for being such assholes.
They just do nothing.
And all, it's just like, oh my god! And even then, it's just like, it's kind of like when the cops
one
show
of
up and
the
like, get
most
out. You're like,
realistic portrayals of cops I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah,
especially like city.
Condescending, rude, like unnecessarily argumentative.
They're like, and
you ever interacted with a cop? And they do that thing where they purposely misunderstand what you're saying. They like get in semantic, grammatical arguments with you. I hate them.
My skin's crawling just thinking about it.
But it's such a big part of it because boom, movie's over. You know, I'm saying cops come through, they have guns.
Yeah, if they do their job, they save everybody.
Movie's over. But so she gets out, then she goes back in to try to get Justin Long back out, but nope, doesn't happen. And this is when we kind of meet up. They get back out. This is when we meet up with the fucking homeless man and gives the exposition dump. And
oh, hold on. You missed the crucial thing, which is Justin Long shoots her while she's trying to save him.
You're correct. I'm sorry.
He's coming in to save him, and he shoots her because he's a panicked idiot.
Yeah.
Talk about something that like they didn't really need to have happen in the movie, but it just... It happening, the just the message.
Well, it's
just
another
just
thing where she is
just
constantly punished for doing the right thing.
Well, yeah, that's where he got the influence from the book, is that she should have followed her gut. Like Justin Long was not somebody that was worth saving, and we find that out later. Like she wouldn't have been pushed off of a fucking water tower if she would have just been like, you know what, I'm gonna dip and all because like, that
keep
shot,
running.
When the homeless guy pulls her out of the window, and that shot of like the mother reaching and going back, that's one of the most horrifying shots I've seen in a while. And like that alone would have made me be like, I'm never coming back to like fucking, I'd leave America, let alone the city of Detroit. Like,
Joe, when I was on here last, one of the last couple episodes, did we end up talking about the movie Feast a little bit.
I don't believe
A scene in the movie Feast, and I did an episode on it way back when I was doing the DVD bunker, but there's a great scene where, like, you know, it's the classic Night of the Living Dead scene where the people are trapped and there's monsters outside, and they devise this plan. They're going to get, there's a beer truck out there. They have an elaborate thing where they're going to put a girl in like a barrel and roll her out, and the monsters won't mess with it. And then she gets out and gets in the truck, and then she's going to come around and get everybody, you know? And she rolls out and it's going according to plan. She gets in the truck and they're like, yeah, all right. And she just tears ass out on the road and leaves them. She just like is gone. And I just,
that's what should have happened.
It's one of those things where, like, I just have never, it's not a particularly great movie. It's like a Project Greenlight movie or something.
Yeah.
It's,
gotcha.
It's like a real, like, gross, gory, mid-2000s, you know. But like, it had that moment that will stick with me forever, because I'm like, that'd be me. If I got out of there, I'm sorry, I ain't come back for nobody.
I mean,
I get it, Brian. That reminds me of to ask.
I'm gonna miss you, girl. I'm gonna be in a scary movie too. She's like, I'm gonna miss you, girl.
Yeah. Oh, Sammy, that's fine. You guys also think there's a there's a big spider over here that I'm gonna kill while we're talking.
Ooh, this really is a horror podcast.
It's a big boy. Do you guys also think that it's sitting still, so I'm gonna finish my thought. Do you guys also think that when she, earlier in the movie, when she meets her, like, you know, the work she's there for, it's a commentary kind of on like a certain cloth of millennials kind of like not taking like neighborhoods and things seriously too? Because when she's like, why are you staying in that neighborhood? And she's like, well, it's
kind
a
of
nice
like
house.
Gentrification culture where, like,
you know, and like
they don't think about certain things.
Like, and I've stayed in, like, I was just stayed in Pittsburgh recently. Not as bad of a barbarian neighborhood, but like close enough where, like, you know, people who lived in that area probably like spend an extra $50 and like go a couple blocks over.
Yeah, I like,
you know,
like
that,
the place I stayed when we came to Philly that time, that Airbnb we got to Philly. It's like, I probably should have researched that a little more. It's like, we're kind of like in the city a bit. You know?
If you're watching this, Philly's great, but do your research for where you stay.
Lined up at that Airbnb in Philly, and it was a little questionable.
You think that Airbnb was the night before that? I stayed at the airport near it was like the Days Inn near the airport. Oh my god, I was like, there's got to be a homicide here every other night. Like, I could have bought heroin in that parking lot, like, immediately. Like, I could have pulled in and bought heroin right then.
But it was brotherly love.
Lost it.
Oh no! Now he's gonna get you, and you're gonna get powers.
Oh well. Oof.
Don't worry, Joe. He's just gonna kill other bugs. Just let him do his thing.
Yeah.
All right, well, we don't cut, so.
No, we don't cut.
It's all stays in.
I have a mixed, you know, it's a mixed thing with spiders. Like, I like spiders in the house because they kill other bugs and shit, but also if I see a spider in the house and it's too big, like you're talking about, it's gotta go.
Scary.
Like,
they're scary.
Small spider can live. Big spider,
like,
gotta go.
I can't tell my wife what I saw, put it that way.
No, never tell. She'd have to burn the house down.
Yeah. But
Bill, we have to move now.
Sorry, guys, but back to our pet.
This is great pod. People love
they love the visual medium. No, so that does happen, and then the after the cops and
shot,
the shooting and all that, we do get into we do get into this, like you said, we've said a few times, like the homeless guy and the exposition dump. And it is the moment the movie does give us this little bit of levity in the last 20 minutes before it ramps up, where, like, he's talking and he's like, I just see shit going on in that house and no one ever comes out. And he's like, you can tell this guy's like briefly seen like the mother. And like,
well, he says she comes out at night.
Yeah,
but she doesn't mess with him.
Well, he like knows like her entire origin. Like, but that's like it cuts deep. He's like, she's been around for 40 years, and it's just like how old are you? You're like 45. Like,
how long have you been homeless in this neighborhood?
He was on my, like, he was actually a homeless child and just grew into a homeless adult.
Yeah, like, what? Like, I mean, it looks great if that's the case, but, like, it's just, it's very jarring. It's just, like, it's you got to just accept that, like, I'll accept that being the most ridiculous element in a movie like this.
Yeah, I mean, the movie stays pretty grounded with what it wants to do, right? So that happens, and then, like, she busts through they're like in a safe haven area.
Kool-Aid Man's through that
and
wall.
She busts through the wall, like the fucking Kool-Aid Man, and just
blasts through.
Rips
them
apart.
Like, I know incest, like, does things to your genes, but, like, geez.
Yeah, she's an X-Men. Turns you into a Superman.
Yeah, she's an X-Men.
Yeah, she's definitely an X-Men.
And then, you know, then they're on the run again, and they fucking end up crawling on top of this water tower. And
Justin Long almost has an epiphany when they're with the homeless guy. Like,
he's right there, and he's like figuring out that, like, yeah. And that's what I'm talking about. Where, like, this movie is tricking
that self-preservation.
Like, oh my god,
though,
are they giving him redemption? This is so dirty. And then, like, yeah, like, literally 2 minutes later, it's like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. They don't make you stew in that too long.
Oh, yeah, no.
No, and then immediately that thing comes charging, and Justin Long just kind of goes, you were me, basically.
He literally says, come get you. I'll tell you what, though. I don't know. There's a couple times last year that I had a pretty big fucking smile plastered across my face watching a movie. One of them was when I was watching RRR, and one of the other ones is the shot of the mother diving off that, coming down, like, from the
Yo.
Top. Like, ah. I love it.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, like, I'm glad they didn't show the whole fall.
No.
Like, yeah, that would have been ridiculous. Like, you just, like, believe that she caught her.
No, I don't know. Like, as far as I'm concerned, she tuck and rolled. She got, you know.
Made
it work.
Believe
she's got
that.
Powers.
Like,
we all know she's an X-Men.
Also, that she used, you know, she used the mother kind of as her fall a little bit, too.
Right, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, just, yeah, that was.
So there was,
yeah, that
it,
is
was
a funny shot.
It was not quite the Austin Powers falling off the building with, you know, in the nightclub scene.
Yeah, why won't you die?
Yeah.
He pulls her over in front of him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite, you know, like Fast and the Furious. Like, as long as I jump off this thing with just one thing in front of me, I'm alive. No, she's pretty fucked up. She's bleeding. Clearly some shit's broken. And
her skull's probably fractured.
Yeah.
Even though her skull is probably 3 inches thick.
Yeah.
And then AJ, just long hair, walks down and to check. And then
he immediately starts gaslighting her again. He immediately.
My God.
It's so good.
He's such a narcissist. That, like, he literally, like, goes down, like, the list. He's like, oh, I had to do what I had to do, but you were, like, but you were slipping, and it's just, like.
And I tried to grab you, he goes hand in hand with the guy, the boyfriend from Midsummer, like, my two favorite shitty characters, but that are also realistic that you've kind of met that guy before, you know what I mean?
But at least, like, the boyfriend from Midsummer was, like, partially drugged, like, by the end.
Yeah.
And all we're just along, you're just like, you're awful. Like,
if you watch the director's cut of The Boyfriend of Midsummer, they give him a little more of a character beef in it. He's still a shitty dude, but, like, him at his purpose on the the cult place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He has a little bit more depth to him than what the edited down version. Like, he's trying to learn about them, but he still sucks. But Brian, yeah, those two characters are so comparable. So
they're just well-drawn, shitty dudes,
instead of once again just helping her out, he's like, "Well, let me talk my way out of this one."
Maybe while you've got a concussion, I can convince you that I didn't do this.
Yeah, literally, he's like, "We'll talk. We got this. What we'll say to the cops and stuff." Like, yeah.
And the mother, who has learned to, like, love and, like, you know, love and care for Tess.
Pisses her baby.
Yeah, immediately turns her attention to fucking AJ and just rips him apart, and then goes back to Tess.
One of the most deserved, like, deaths.
Oh, it's a cheer moment. It's a cheer moment.
And the way she does it is really brutal and gruesome.
And
but still shot in a way that's tasteful and weirdly.
Yep. Like, oh, yeah. Again, they don't show too. Gouging his eyes, but his head's ripped open. But they don't even just, like, he's dead. And he got it. And it was horrifyingly painful. And you're like, good. Yeah.
And, Brian, you know, like, how Laura can't do anything. She sat down, of course. And immediately, she's grossed out by, like, Tess. And I was kind of like, yeah, I mean, I'll pause it, but, like, she's not the real monster here. Like, it just looks real gross, but you immediately get over it. Like, everything else is.
It takes it takes a bit to get over it, but you get
But, yeah, and then, I mean, I do think this is one of my all-time, like, I love a good needle drop. One of my all-time kind of favorite endings is, you know, the monster, the mother who does have to die, does take the bullet to the head. Tess is able to, like, no, I'm injured.
But she does have a moment with her there where it's, like, kind of peaceful and happy. And like,
it's an empathetic,
love,
like,
there's love there. Like, she puts her out of her misery. Before she dies.
She actually puts her out of her misery.
Yep.
Blows her brain out, gets up, and then, like, you know, directed by Zach Krieger, Be My Baby is playing. Yeah.
Oh,
and, like, it's so fucking catchy, and it cuts, and we get a few cuts, you know, her walking away, and the sun's coming up, and the last shot of Tess walking and the water tower with, like, the sun, it being, what, dawn?
Yeah.
It's such a B-movie shot. I don't know how to explain that the exact shot, but it's, like, grainy and a little, like, nothing's, like, fully in frame, and it just kind of fits with the music playing.
Well, Zach has said that he one of the movies that, like, influenced this was Texas Chainsaw, and like, you can see that
I can see easy that.
With this, like the grainy shots are all over there, and I love that. That was a it's rare even in movies where there is a final girl, like, for them to give just like a victory, like, lap in a sense, like, watch them, like, really get a walk off into the sunset or sunrise in this case. So yeah, that's it felt good in so many circumstances. You know, AJ's dead, mom's dead, and our hero Tess gets to,
because you gotta imagine Tess is, you know, there's probably some people that are looking for her back, you know, from where she's
been. It's been 2 weeks, definitely.
Been 2 weeks. Yeah. But some people may have, you know, dismissed it a hair, maybe, because, and if I'm her, I'm just getting the fuck back, making a call, getting back home, no call. That leave all that mess there.
Yeah.
No one's ever
going
to find it. The rental property will find it.
Yeah, call management. Call management in the morning, because that was, woof. Like I was worried. You know what I was worried about? Before the movie ended, before AJ died, when he pushed her off the tower, I was worried that, again, redemption, but I saw a different ending happening in my brain where he gets pushed off, where Tess dies, and they do this whole sequence where everything that happened to him, what he experienced, overshadows his crimes, and he gets, like, a resurgence in his career and stuff like that.
Taxi Driver ending almost.
And it's just like one of those things where just like, I don't know if I would have hated that, but it definitely, this fit better. With what it was trying to be.
Yeah, I don't think that's the... I see where you're
That feels like the ending to a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah,
right?
And that's...
Yeah,
Tales
from
this movie. This movie isn't...
An ending that spits in your face.
I don't think this movie is a story that's trying to do that, too, right? Like, how, like...
No.
Like, how, my biggest argument for that one is always, like, the Gone Girl ending, right? Like, people hate how that ended. I'm like, well, that's the biggest...
ending.
But that's because it's the biggest torture to these two people that could ever fucking exist.
Like, that
and now they're stuck together.
Orange, why I kind of bring that up, and that's a different podcast to have, is the traditional Hollywood ending is a person watching me like, why didn't he, you know, they have the big Fatal Attraction battle, you know, and he kill her and this and that, and same with Barbarian. You know, just along its redemption, but oh, he has to live with knowing that it was all a lie, and he's the hero. That's just such a different.
But he would have. That's the thing, is his character would have lived with that happily.
He'd have been fine with that.
Oh yeah, when he was on the phone with his representatives, and they were telling him everything. Remember, all he was caring about was, like, the pilot's not, like, they're not going to pick up the show, and not mentioning at all, like, his victim and, like, what he did. And, yeah, he wouldn't have given a shit, which, like, yeah, it would have been a Black Mirror ending where, like, we just sat there with this foul taste in our mouths. Like, and honestly, I think that would have hurt the rewatchability because, like, you know, like...
Oh, the movie's not a hit with that
ending. With that ending, absolutely not. No way.
Oh, yeah, no way.
It's too, it's, like, too on the nose, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I feel like we covered a really nice amount of the movie. Anything you'd, like, kind of want to add or, like, final thoughts on this?
I was really happy to watch it again. Like, it's really good. There's certain movies where, like, I mean, it's weird because, like, I wouldn't say that there was, like, a twist to this movie so much as, like, have either of you seen the movie Good Time with Robert Pattinson?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yes, oh, yeah. We'll just, like, I'm not going to spoil anything for that movie. That I love that movie. But, like, the midway point when, like, the big thing happens and basically the movie flips on its head and all. Like, I like stuff like that because it's not so much a twist. It's just, like, if anything, it's a great little dash of life where, like, the unexpected could happen. And I really love that. I love this movie. Feels like it was written, like, while he was writing it, he really didn't think about, like, what was going to happen next. He was just, like, in the moment. And I appreciate that because, like, and because of that, like, so many, all the scenes, like, feel like their own little short film and compiled next to one another. Like, yeah, nothing feels wasted. Like, yeah, you hate who you need to hate. You like who you need to like. You're shocked by what you need to be shocked by. And then when you rewatch it again, you can appreciate, like, yeah, the small details that, like, you just see that just make you laugh. Like, I laughed equally as hard, if not harder, at the measuring tape stuff, especially when I got a better sense this time around about who his character was.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I would highly recommend this to anybody who, especially to anybody who's, like, if you're like, oh, I'm afraid of gore or I'm afraid of, like, sensitive material in regards to, like, you know, sexual assault and stuff like that. It does deal with that, but it doesn't hammer it in your face. It's all about, like,
it's done in a pretty safe way.
Surprisingly safe. Like, it lets your, lets you use your own imagination. That's what I'm saying with, like, the labels on the video cassettes. Like, that was enough to make me go, like, oh, my God.
In a weird Jesus way, Christ. And I hope you follow what I'm saying. It's a good G-rated horror movie.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. This movie, with a few sewing, like, editing techniques, could have been a PG-13 movie, but it would have been shitty. So, like,
yeah. No, that's great, Anthony. I love that you picked this and we were all able to revisit it. Do you, have anything you want to... share or plug with our audience members?
Listeners. I mean, my
audience members, listeners.
My partner is starting, like, a wreath business. I know this isn't movie related, but, like, I have nothing, like, you know, I've heard of
John. Send us the link. It'll be down below.
Movies have wreaths, so
yeah. But, like, theme like that, like, she's big into movies and stuff like that. So, you're looking at, Princess Jasmine, PrincessJasmine, Princess Jasmine. So it looks like, yes, Princess Jasmine without the vowels. So, if you want to hit up and check out, she had her most recent post is, like, about her most recent project that she's taking commissions for. So, yeah, check that out. I myself have, Fidelio_Doom. That's my Instagram name, if you just want to see me, like, dick around in between just me living my life. So, but yeah,
cool. We'll put the links down below.
I've been promoting this. Like, I'm so excited. Yeah. I'm excited to, like, be a part
of it. Yeah, Yusuf will put the tags in.
You will put all your tags in. I really appreciate it, man. We had a really nice talk.
It's always nice to meet someone from the Twitters who's a real person who's nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, oh, yeah. I've been checking you guys out for a while. So it's like, yeah, it's almost like it's very surreal to talk to you. So of course.
We're just normal guys.
We're just normal guys.
I know we seem like very celebrities. We're
trying to end a show with a nice sign off. You can find us here.
I'll never let you.
And, stay frightful, everyone. Bye.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.